This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. As a psychologist, entrepreneur, mother of three, life coach, CEO, publisher of Serenity Wellness Magazine, producer, performer, and now TV personality, Southern California-based Dr. Kimberly Boynton embodies the spirit of versatility and accomplishment. This dynamic tour de force is currently in pre-production on a new streaming series in collaboration with Emmy-winning actor, producer, author, and motivational speaker Sean Kanan. And through this new venture, Boynton will reach a larger audience in her knowledge, insight, and expertise in the mental health sciences. Currently, Boynton is seeking a spike in the numbers of patients who are experiencing depression and anxiety. And on today's episode of eHealth Radio, we will be focusing on the ever-growing numbers of depression and anxiety that we are seeing in the U.S. today. And Dr. Boynton, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you, Eric, for having me.
Well, you're certainly more than welcome. I really appreciate your time. I know you're very busy with all that you do. And again, we thank you. So for starters, what are the signs of depression and anxiety? Let's start there.
Definitely social, becoming antisocial, doing things out of character, not making eye contact. Anxiety is more if they're feeling like their heart's racing, it's about to jump out of their chest, cold sweats, just feeling that nervousness without being able to expel all that energy. And it just causes, sometimes it could cause hyperventilation. It's been horrible over the last couple of years. I've definitely seen an increase, especially with the kids.
Certainly some interesting feedback from you on that for sure. What factors contribute to the development of depression and anxiety? Talk to us about that.
Definitely COVID has played its role in it over the last couple of years. My patients have changed from where before I was having more couples, individuals. I would say around like the beginning of 2020 to mid 2020, or I'd say 2022, definitely I've gotten more youth, more teens, and they attribute it to, coming from the pandemic. Children and, anybody overall was just not meant to not be socializing, but the kids especially and the teens were affected by it. So whereas, the patients that are coming in now are saying, during the pandemic, they were watching the news, they were seeing and hearing things on social media that was just, kind of freaking them out, and them not really understanding what's going on and believing everything that they saw in social media definitely played a role in a lot of the anxiety. Being kept from, seeing friends and doing the normal things, playing sports, being able to go out, to hang out, just even at the malls or, Starbucks or wherever it was that they normally would go, was just not happening anymore. And so when they got confined to being in a house, it caused a lot of rift also between, parents and kids because they were all stuck together. And so where if they didn't have a great relationship, it definitely got worse. By the time they went back to school, it was what I've seen mostly is the ones who got stuck in that transition from either elementary school to middle school to high school, where, we prepare for that when, back when we were in school, we were prepared, to make that transition from elementary to middle school and middle school to high school, where these kids went from being in one classroom, one teacher and seeing the same kids, to going online. And now all of a sudden they're thrown into this middle school and they don't know how to interact anymore. So a lot of the stress that's going on is the fact that they don't know how to socialize anymore. And the ones that do are still trying to find, who they belong to, where they belong to, what group do they fit into. Their friends that they might have had before pandemic aren't as close as they used to be. So everybody's been wandering around, like just trying to figure out how to fit in. And as you know, since pandemic, everything has just fast forwarded at this like immense speed of lightning where, one day it was, we just had, MySpace and Facebook, and now you've got all these different social medias and everybody's, conformed to TikTok and watching everything off of TikTok. And now these new trends are coming from TikTok. So trying to keep up with the times has definitely been a challenge that I've seen and experienced with my teens, anywhere from, you know, trying to fit in and, you know, what category they are, what label they are. That's a big thing now. Labels, gender identities, just pronouns. There's just so much that's just evolved, you know, since pandemic. And that's just caused a lot of anxiety and depression with them because they just don't know how to handle it. And they don't know where they fit in anymore.
Once again, some very interesting feedback on that. And COVID certainly has played a big part, as mentioned, for sure, unfortunately. Are there specific coping strategies or exercises that you do recommend to your clients to help them manage their depressive and or anxiety symptoms?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First things first, I like to validate their feelings. So when they come in, and it depends on, you know, what their issues are. There's different strategies, you know, that we use for depression. Definitely, you know, talking about it helps. Changing a mindset on, you know, what they're experiencing. And I use different types of therapy, from cognitive behavioral therapy, which is CBT. And that helps individuals recognize and change negative thought patterns and behaviors that contribute to depression. Family therapy, if the family was involved in it, I involve the entire family in treatment, because that can be beneficial when family dynamics contribute to the child's depression. Do like a tailored approach where the individual needs and develops, we develop the stages of the child, especially depending on what age they are. Younger children may benefit from play therapy, where the older adolescents may engage in a more traditional talk therapy. I basically try to meet them at their level, get the parents involved. In many cases, parents or caregivers, you know, play an essential role in their child's therapy. So we can learn strategies together to support, you know, how they can support their child, create a supportive home environment, help reinforce the skills they've learned in therapy. Most of the time, I don't like to go towards the medication route, just because it seems like that's the new thing to do. And a lot of parents everybody's self-diagnosing now. So they come in and they're the ones telling me, oh, my child needs to be on this medication or, you know, that medication. And my first question is like, well, why do you believe that? And they've self-diagnosed themselves. You know, they go to Google University or WebMD, and all of a sudden they became this doctor that they know what their child needs to be on. So I'm not a big advocate for that. Unless I do see signs of something like that, then I definitely will send them over to, you know, our medical doctor or their medical doctor for something like that. But consistency and patience, improvement takes time. So it's essential for parents and caregivers to be patient and consistent in their support. Some children may need ongoing therapy, while others just may require periodic check-ins. What I really like the most is, you know, when I'm able to sit down with them and talk to them and find out, you know, why it is that they're depressed, and we kind of go through everything, and I give them like different tools to use. And then they come back and they're like, oh my gosh, that worked great. Anxiety, I like to use what's called the 4x4 breathing method, where they breathe in through their nose for 4 counts, hold it for 4 counts, breathe out through their mouth for 4 counts, and then they do nothing for 4 counts, and they repeat that 4 times. What that does, it helps slows the heart rate down and, you know, lessens the anxiety. And so just that alone, everybody can use, you know, anywhere. So it's not like you have to make a big deal and make a big production that you're breathing in and breathing out. It's something that just can be done without anybody even really noticing what you're doing, but it really helps. And it's also good at nighttime. If you're having a hard time falling asleep, you can utilize that as well. And it just calms you and helps you fall asleep a little bit better. But definitely, you know, promoting a healthier lifestyle that includes regular physical activity, balanced diet, you know, adequate sleep and stress management will also help prevent depression and, you know, support treatment as well.
Really good to have you on to focus in on this. We're speaking with Dr. Kimberly Boynton, a leading Southern California-based psychologist and licensed marriage and family therapist, here on eHealth Radio's Health News and Mental Health channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, continuing on, anxiety can manifest in various forms, from what I understand, such as generalized anxiety disorder, social anxiety disorder, or panic anxiety disorder. Can you explain the differences and how they are treated differently in therapy?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. So anxiety, like you said, you kind of tackled all of them. Generalized anxiety disorder, which is GAD. Some of the characteristics of that is like excessive worrying, anxiety about everyday life, events and situations. Most of the time, it doesn't even really have a specific cause. It just kind of happens. And that could be anywhere from like, you know, they just, there's something that's happened, you know, throughout time, like the pandemic, they think about it or they see something on social media again. They're kind of like, you know, freaking out about it, not even knowing what's causing it. Some of the symptoms of that is muscle tension, relentlessness, fatigue, irritability, having difficulty concentrating on things, and definitely sleep disturbances. And general anxiety disorder, like I said, can be triggered by a wide range of stressors, including like work and relationships and health concerns. Social anxiety is more like a social phobia. So some of the characteristics of that would be like intense fears, avoidance, social situations due to fear of being judged or embarrassed, which we kind of see more within the schools. Again, coming from that pandemic, trying to fit in, trying to figure out, you know, where they belong. But some of those physical symptoms would be like the sweats, you know, blushing, trembling, that rapid heartbeat we were talking about, nausea, a real strong desire to escape social situations. So some of them you'll see like withdrawn. Those are the ones that are kind of sitting, eating lunch, you know, by themselves, or maybe going to the restroom a lot. But some of those triggers are definitely like social interactive, public speaking, and situations where one just kind of feels like they're scrutinized. And then you have panic disorder, which panic disorder is more reoccurrent, unexpected panic attacks characterized by sudden intense fears, often with just no apparent trigger as well. With that, shortness of breath, chest pain, palpitations, dizziness, sweating, just feelings of, you know, feeling like they're doomed for stuff. And panic attacks can, you know, just seemingly occur out of the blue. But they could also be triggered by specific situations and some phobias as well. That's more like if somebody was having a phobia of going out of their house, which that's another thing that's become really huge, is people don't want to leave the house anymore. And it's sad because a lot of my teenagers are going through it. We would think that it'd be more of the adults, but it's really a lot of the teenagers. And that's why they get prone to staying home and playing video games and just staying on the electronics. And some of them don't even want to go out of their room. So some of the issues I see with that are parents are trying to, you know, parents are coming saying, help, you know, my kid doesn't want to socialize. They want to come out of their room. They're afraid to. And they've just developed like all these phobias of, you know, I don't want to go out in public because this scares me. And, you know, I don't want to go to school because I'm afraid, you know, somebody's going to come in and shoot up the school. So it's actually turned from a phobia to some of it's turned to where what's called obsessive compulsive disorder, like a OCD, which are like the distressing thoughts and images and urges, compulsions, repetitive behaviors, you know, aimed at reducing the distress, you know, caused by those obsessions. And OCD can be triggered by various, you know, things such as, you know, contamination fears, fears of harm, or, you know, any of the things that are like that onset it. Then you've got separation anxiety disorder. And separation anxiety disorder is basically separating from an attachment figure, typically with children, but I mean, it can affect adults where I've had patients where they get separation anxiety because they've been a mom, a single mom for years. And all of a sudden, you know, the first child leaves the nest and they go off to college, or they go off and, you know, get engaged, or they move out on their own. And parents actually will go through that. It's also called the empty nest syndrome, but, you know, that is a form of separation anxiety as well. So those are just a few of the different anxieties that we see, or I see in my practices.
A lot of great information there and a lot to learn from your responses as well. Thanks for that. Now, CBT is often used to treat anxiety. Can you explain how CBT works and its effectiveness?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's usually what I use on a daily basis. So CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, is literally one of the most effective and widely used therapeutic approaches for treatment for anxiety. It's based on the idea that our thoughts and feelings and behaviors are interconnected, and it focuses on identifying and modifying irrational and negative thought patterns, behaviors that contribute to anxiety. Some of the ways that CBT is, that I use CBT is to identify the negative thought patterns. Individuals with anxiety learn to recognize and identify their automatic negative thoughts, because these thoughts can involve catastrophic thinking, overestimating threats, underestimating their ability to cope. Some of the other things are challenging irrational beliefs. For example, once a negative thought pattern is identified, individuals work with me to challenge their irrational beliefs. They examine and the evidence for and against their anxious thoughts. Exposure and desensitization. CBT, you know, often incorporates exposure therapy, where individuals gradually and systematically confront feared situations or objects, and exposures help them learn that their fears are often unfounded or exaggerated. There's a lot that goes into CBT, but like I said, it's the most widespread that most therapists use. And the therapeutic relationship between the individual and myself is crucial in CBT, because we provide that guidance, support, and safe environment for the exploration and change. But CBT has been shown to be highly effective in treating various anxiety disorders, general anxiety disorders, all the kind of disorders we just recently talked about. And most people experience a significant improvement in their anxiety symptoms and learn valuable skills for managing anxiety in a long-term effect of it.
Dr. Boynton, really do appreciate your visit with us here today for what you do, and really some super information here, most helpful. And our focus here today on eHealth Radio. One last question for you, and a great place to conclude. There may be a little bit of an overlap, but I think it's a good question, no doubt. How prevalent is anxiety, depression in society today, and why do you think it's on the rise?
Well, as you know, I mean, everything, social media, again, goes back to that. They're being more exposed to things that are not necessarily true that they're seeing, but among the most prevalent, just age group, demographic factors, you know, general common key points, I guess, or like the global prevalence. Anxiety gets affected by everybody in the country around the world. And it's the most rapidly moving mental health disorder globally. But age groups, anxieties can affect individuals of all ages. They often first manifest in childhood, adolescence, and early adulthood, but it also develops later on in life. But I think just by everything that's going on around us, it's consistently moving and changing. And again, trying to keep up with everything that's going on just causes general anxiety. Definitely politics is a big thing as well too. So that's, you know, that's always changing from day to day. So anybody who, I like to tell my patients, don't watch the news. If you want to not have anxiety today, don't turn the news on, you know, because that just causes anxiety alone, because it's always something negative on there and they're always reporting something, you know, that's not necessarily all true, but it just gets everybody stressed out. If you don't know exactly and follow it on a day-to-day basis, just by turning it on, even for one day, will stress you out. So that's my biggest advice to my patient. Like, don't turn the news on. Don't start your day watching the news.
I'd say that's some really simple and great advice right there. A lot of negativity out there. It just seems to be getting worse and worse. And depending on the network and the angle, there's always a motive in it, and unfortunately. Really do appreciate, again, all the details here today and for what you do. If listeners wanted to connect with you and or to get more information on your practice, where's the best place online to get further information?
Definitely going to my website, which is just my first name and last name.com. So KimberlyBoynton.com. And Kimberly is spelled a little bit differently. So it's KYMBERLI. And then my last name, Boynton.com.
And of course, as always, for your convenience, listeners, you can find this link and other links within the show notes of this broadcast. Dr. Boynton, all the best. And thanks so much for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
And thank you so much for having me, Eric. You have a great day.
And thank you, and you as well. We've been speaking with Dr. Kimberly Boynton, a leading Southern California-based psychologist and licensed marriage and family therapist. And again, for all the details, visit KimberlyBoynton.com. And this is Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.